Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, JD Bunkus. Give them a follow at their names on social media. And hey, go subscribe to this podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, all that wonderful stuff that tells our bosses that you like us. And I hope you do. It was a fun weekend. A lot of sports going on. Some of us spent the weekend on the couch, working, grinding. Some of us went to games. I don't know. Ailish was at a Jays game. JD's at a Leafs game. JD becomes the world's foremost expert on... Oh, you did Jays on Friday. My mom is going to games, which is an extremely rare thing. My mom, I get her a little Blue Jays hat. She's all excited. She brings Ailish chips.
Oh, that's cute.
Bragging about not bringing anything for JD and having a good time. But
yeah, this is weird. I don't understand why your mom doesn't like me to the degree in which she's enjoying
I don't think she doesn't like you. It just like my stepdad pointed out that she had brought chips for Ailish and mini eggs for me. And he was like, oh, nothing for JD. And my mom like cackled a little bit. And
I don't think she doesn't dislike you. Blake even sent me one where it was like he was joyous about his mom not liking you. I gotta say, I'm very uncomfortable with the whole situation now. It was like Blake sent me a text being like, my mom's so happy that she didn't get you anything. I'm like, okay. On my Friday night, I'm at a Blue Jays game. I read this text. I'm like, what is this for? Like, anyway, the Murphy family seems to be just like out for my blood, out for my head. My family likes you guys, but I guess I don't know. Like, this is a now. I don't know what I've done to deserve this.
My stepdad had your back.
Yeah,
my stepdad had your back. He was
like
doing the where's something for JD. I think my mom just gets a kick out of being mentioned on the show. all right, so JD, you did have a pretty big sports weekend. Your brother's in town. You go to multiple games. Little bit of a disappointing turn for you on Sunday, but the Leafs come through for you. What is the vibe at a Leafs game right now? Because I watch them on TV and I'm just like. I know there's the Matthews chase, but I'm fully in let's get us to the playoffs mode. Is that the feel at Scotia as well?
Well, the feel from the game is just pretty much like what you would expect, which is people just want to see the Leafs win. It's still a sleepy crowd throughout the first period. They still need to run the promotions team throughout the arena, as you guys know very well, the entire game to try to get people engaged in it. And then the crowd starts to perk up come the third period when the stakes get a little bit higher. It's a game against the Islanders where they started slow and then they end up performing extremely well in the second period. And then the third, I thought they did a good job of closing it out. But I think that if you're a Leafs fan and you go to a game where you have a chance at history with Auston Matthews at 60 goals, you buy those tickets, especially the way that we did, with the thought of, okay, we're targeting this game specifically in hopes of doing it. To have Matthews removed on a minor injury, you understand it from the Leafs standpoint, but there's no question it's disappointing and that it did completely change the feeling of the game. And I do have a couple thoughts on the team from the weekend, but do you guys have, before we get into that, do you guys have any, are you starting to sweat the Matthews 60 thing? Because Stamkos put that in his head, and now I'm kind of feeling like Stamkos did the kiss of death when he went, if he doesn't score 60, it's going to be in his head forever. He's now got 6 games left. Like, that's it. 6 games left to get 2 goals. And I know for Auston Matthews at his goal-scoring clip that that's a pretty easy knock-him-down thing, but we had it done in Penn a week ago, and as we should
have. You're saying 70.
Do you feel as though it's a little bit in his head, a little bit in his head with Auston Matthews right now, and are you concerned? Because I'm telling you right now, I don't care who knows it. I care about Auston Matthews hitting 60 goals. And if I'm a Leafs fan, I don't think that you should be embarrassed about that. No one's saying 60 goals is more important than winning a Stanley Cup. And if you make that false equivalency, no offense, you're an idiot. There's no question 60 is a cool benchmark, and it's one that we want. Are you a little worried? Are you a little nervous about it? Because I got to tell you, I'm 5 to 8% nervous now.
I'm not nervous. I think decision. I mean, 2 goals in 6 games. We've seen what he's been able to do. I think that one of the most positive things is he's really not talked about it much, and I think that yes, he's not going to be an open book.
Not letting it out.
I think it is good. I think it's fine because if he was to say, "Yeah, you know, 60 something that I really want, and it's been, you know, it's an aspiration of mine," and then we start saying, "Okay, he mentioned it, whatever, blah blah blah," but Yeah, sure. It's
that's so weird. See, that's the hockey player in you that I look at on the outside. That is the most wild take in all of this that you have. It's like, because he's not talking about it, that means that it's good. Because I don't understand this. It's like, no, to me, it's talk it out. Player. Make it normal. No. Make it normal. Don't have
we
it just
like
all
to
inside.
Admit that we care about personal accolades because
no, but Stamkos did it. He scored 60 goals
Stamkos,
and then he comes.
Stamkos. Well, he talked about it Stamkos. Afterwards,
yeah.
Right? I don't think on the journey to 60 he okay. talked about it. I think it's like you don't want to distract from the fact that this is all about the postseason and what you guys do. And the Leafs now okay. set a record for most wins, and they set a record for most points. And like
yep.
that is the journey that they are on. But I think that if Austin Matthews is talking about getting these personal accolades in the media, then that's everything.
Well, if they ask him a question, Ailish, and he does, like, it's a different story if he just sits at the podium and he's like, all right, still two away. Like, of course not. But if he gets asked directly, mm-hmm. what does 60 mean to you? I don't understand why it would ever be a bad thing for an athlete to answer with, 60 would be special for me. Like, we all know it is anyways. Literally mm-hmm. every player that talks about it says how incredible of an accomplishment it is. They clearly know. That do you think that a guy becomes a goal scorer to that degree without caring about what his goal scoring numbers is? Have you guys ever seen an athlete who is a spectacular scorer in any sport that didn't care about the scoring stats? Like, give me a break. They all care.
Ailish, you are competitive about everything because yeah. you're still missing that competitive edge from when you played. Of course Austin Matthews cares about it. So yeah. I don't have
I
concern.
Think he does care. I'm not saying he doesn't care about it.
Yes.
100% he cares about it. In the back of his mind, he thinks about it every time he's out there. We saw him get nine yeah. shots in one period.
See, you're competitive
one goal away from 50. When he was one goal away from 50, you knew it was going to yeah. happen. But I'm not worried about 60 happening was the main start of this conversation. I do think that he thinks about it.
You think it's going to happen, though.
I think it's going to happen, and I'm
but
not
you,
worried
but
about
you
it
would
not
be worried
happening.
If he didn't get it, right? Like, you would
no.
be little... No.
No.
You don't care. So you
don't care
if Austin Matthews gets 59 goals.
No, I don't think it's going to matter. And we're not going to talk about it if the Leafs lose one playoff series or if they do continue to win playoff series and they get through the. I don't think it matters at all. I think it matters to us as media members and us talking about it because it's another amazing accomplishment that the Leafs have done this season. But the second that the playoffs start, who cares?
So I'm not concerned about it going into these six games. If it didn't happen, I would be a little concerned because you have to go back to January 2019 for the last time Austin Matthews only scored one goal over a 9-game stretch, which is what that would be, or zero. And or I guess you could go back to last year's playoffs when he only scored one goal in that series for the last time he was in a slump like that. So I would be worried from a why isn't this clicking standpoint. If it doesn't happen, but no, heading into this, I have no concern. He's going to, I actually
he's
still
gonna
think
hit
65,
it.
I think 65 is still on the table. So,
depending if he plays. I don't know why he didn't play. What's this tiny injury? So, I'd love to know more information.
Well, this is hockey.
Tell me.
It's a mystery minor injury.
Is it a sliver?
It's not a big deal, but you can't know anything about it.
Yes, again, I need to know.
No one is making the false equivalency of 60 goals is more important than playoff success.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we need to stop putting those two things together. And Ailish, that's what I don't like is the idea that, no, well, Ailish just did. She went like, once the playoffs start, who cares or none of it matters. And I'm like, yes. They're like, of course playoffs matter more. Mm-hmm. I don't need a lecture on playoffs matter more than of individual accomplishments. But to try to dismiss this as though it's nothing when we've watched an entire regular season with this incredible goal scoring race and this incredible season for Matthews, yes, absolutely topping it off with that round number of 60 matters. Every single hockey player that you guys know that's a professional, you want a tip on like all their numbers, all their phones, all their things, like they all have their numbers. Like, look at the way they put their numbers into their contracts, for God's sakes. These guys are overly obsessed with this stuff. So yes, 60 matters to Matthews, 60 matters to this organization, 60 should matter to this fan base. 60 is an incredible accomplishment, and 59 does not ring out the same way, even though it is one less goal. So no, I want Austin Matthews to get it, and as a lifelong fan of this team, I am absolutely sweating out whether or not he gets it. In the end, anxiety in me is that he's going to sit on 59 and I'm going to regret it and hate it. If they win in the playoffs, yes, I'll be thinking about the playoffs, but I will still always look back on the regular season and wish that he got 60 goals. So the
Jamie,
game itself. Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say he's going to get it and he's going to get it tomorrow. And it's going to be even worse for you than the anxiety of him sitting on 59
because
it should have been the game you were at.
Yeah. Okay, so the game that I was at, though, I'll say this about the team. The Islanders are not the best team in hockey this year. Like, they've had a tough season. But to be on a back-to-back and to play with the force they did in the second period was unbelievably encouraging to me. I will say that from a negative standpoint, I just still... Tavares steps onto that main line, and you just see how different it is with him versus Matthews, right? Like, good player... But the force in which they play with Tavares or Matthews to Tavares is so night and day. So incredibly night and day. But being there, a couple thoughts. I thought Jack looked really athletic and very healthy, and he came up with some very nice saves. And there was a couple, like early he made this toe save where he snapped the pad across and kicked one out on a wrist shot that was off the rush. And I thought, oh boy, that was really athletic. That was really confident. He looked very good in his net. He looked big in his net. And if it's not for Kerfoot doing I don't know how it looked on the broadcast, but it sure looked bad live, smashing it into his own net in front of the net. Like, when is that ever a good play? Swinging your stick in that direction there. Like, I don't understand how, like, that's just a total brain fart moment. And it took everything in my power not to tweet at Anthony Stewart, like, nice hands on your boy. But yeah, outside of that, I really thought Jack was sharp, and it was a high level confidence game for me, especially down the stretch when the Islanders started to put it on the Leafs a little bit and gave them their best counterpunch. Jack came up with some stops, and I felt really, really good about that. Number two is I really like Pierre Engvall, and watching him and his stride live and just the way that he is playing right now is high degree of confidence, and I would say that he is one of the more underrated stories of the season. Like, I think he hit 14 goals last night. Am I right? 14? Either way, it's 13 or 14 goals for Pierre Engvall this season, and he could have had another if Nylander gets the puck through on that 2-on-1 at the end of the game. He's someone that's doing a lot of things for them. He's incredibly fast. He no longer skates the puck in that backwards direction that he used to do that was so infuriating. He's very much more north-south right now. He's not physical for his size whatsoever, which is at times a little aggravating, considering that, like, you see anybody who's 6'5 like that, you kind of want to see just a little bit of something. But I couldn't help but feel watching that game, like, can I just get a little bit of a look, a little bit of a taste of a Tavares, Engvall, Mikheyev line, where you have three guys who are really good on the forecheck, three guys who can move, and three guys who are just, like, long and are good at just intercepting and picking off plays. I'm just curious to see what that line would look like. Again, then I feel like you can still pair Kerfoot and Nylander together, who have had chemistry in the past. Nylander looked good, but I actually kind of like him as this roving guy who they're just spot putting on different lines, where they're like, okay, we're gonna have an offensive zone draw, you're gonna play up there with Matthews and Marner, and we're gonna give you a look there. And having Bunting drop down the lineup to start that game in the blender, to me, was just a reminder of, you can put this guy down the lineup safely for some stretches. I don't think that he has to have the guarantee playing on the top line minutes when you have opportunities to score and you have William Nylander again as that rover.
So I agree that Engvall's been terrific. I'm really, really impressed with him. I know that his future here is uncertain because of RFA status and the cap sheet and all that stuff. I would say I'd be a little hesitant to try him, you know, up the lineup in the iteration that you're describing right now, this late in the year, just because I have such an immense trust in him defensively to tilt the ice, right? Like, this is a guy who his deployment is twice as defense heavy as offense heavy, and no matter who you put him with, as long as it's any five of Tavares, Mikheyev, Camp, Kasha, I'm missing Wood, Kerfoot, as long as it's any combination of those guys, Engvall's driving play. So I'd be a little hesitant to elevate him right now. He's certainly earned it, you know, 31 points in a defensive heavy deployment. But right now I like very much how the third line looks, and you see even a little bit they played that Tavares, Marner, Mikheyev line basically like a defensive line last night, and I didn't love that as much as just like, hey, our third line is
they needed to when they were protecting a lead and those guys went out there and they had to close it like that. So that's probably distorting a little bit of,
and
like,
that
the
fourth line you are just not trusting in the defensive zone. I did think that was the best the fourth line has looked in forever, but you're not.
And it was the only line that you really didn't like with the blender going into it. It's one of the most like steady pairings or line that we've looked at. But the biggest positive I take away from last night especially is you can find new chemistry, and that is important going into the playoffs, because if they have some struggles with that top line producing, if they're not finding the offensive power that they've had this season, it looks like you can upgrade and you can promote guys and you can move guys around that need to, hey, Bunting, you're going to go a little lower and you're going to have to drive some of this line. Engvall, you're going to play here. Mikheyev's going to do this. And those are positive signs. If you're only playing your top one line like this, your second line like this, and your third line like this, there's no, you know, promise that you can change that in the playoffs and have it work. So that is the thing that I look at going down the rest of the stretch. If we're looking for things that matter, that's something that matters to me as a fan, knowing that, hey, you have a little bit of a backup.
Yeah, so I want to see the last couple of games or two of the games where they go at kind of like a real playoff mock lineup. Maybe you end up doing a little bit of rest on that final game, especially if Matthews is 60. I don't know how you want to approach the final Bruins game, but I would say that considering the physical nature of that for that last game against them and how it got chippy and Hall with Lyubushkin and some of the
you
stuff.
You got to protect a couple guys.
Yeah, I would think that it's at least got to be a consideration for your team, right? Like, I would be putting that thought at least out there a little bit. But I do want to see some sharpening, and I don't want to see experimentation the rest of the way. But I guess, like, Ailish, I'm more with you in terms of the thing with Blake, where it's like, I don't want them to really focus on, like, oh, okay, well, this line's defensive and this line's that. What I like about the Leafs right now is that they have balance of all of those things on each line. And what I like about Engvall and Mikheyev is that they are these defensive players who are easily reliable in that zone, but also have been provided offense. I actually really liked the way that Engvall looked with Nylander last night. Like, I thought that the two of them had absolute chemistry, and the two of them, the way that they can both skate, the way that they're both dangerous, that line felt dangerous the entire game. Like, they felt dangerous the entire night. I just loved what I saw from Engvall. Thought his season is a little underrated, and I like the idea that they can throw the lines into the blender, and that you felt good about it, that it felt like there were fits despite not long stretches of guys with other guys. That's what I liked about last night. The Blue Jays weekend. Let's touch on this quickly before we end up getting to Shai Davidi. 2-3 against Oakland. Not bad. The umpire Saturday night was one of the truly worst things I've ever seen. I know that sometimes we do this stuff where it's umpire scorecards, and I go, okay, well, what is this? They give you the little bit of context with it, but the missed balls or like balls called for strikes was horrific. Like an absolute disaster. That pitch outside that he called on Lourdes Gurriel, I think, changed the baseball game. I think we all thought that it changed the baseball game. But yeah, I have this impactful missed calls and called strike accuracy. He had a 68%. 68%, 18 of 56 called strikes were true balls. That's 68% is on average compared to 88%, which is something that we've just taken and been like, that's acceptable, 88%, okay, barely an A. You know, barely an A is what these guys get every single time. I never really complain about the umpires guy, but I do feel as though that kept Toronto from the sweep this weekend.
It almost certainly did, and I'm not a big complaint about the umps guy either, but when it's, hey, and the stats you're referencing are how many balls were called for strikes. If we go for the entire strike zone, it was the worst call game of the entire season.
Yeah.
Nelson is now in the one percentile among umpires for this year, so he's old dead last, and it would have been... And this again, this
I love
is
the
all...
one percentile. It's like he's just last. He's the worst umpire this year. Like, that's all you say.
Well, it's
like
the one percentile. They've got the little graphics there.
I know. I just like the way you frame that from, again, your analytics brain, the one percentile. It's like, no. He's a qualified.
He's at the bottom.
He's been the worst umpire this year.
It would have been the fifth worst game all of last season. So this is an aberration in any year.
I was at that game and... like the atmosphere of the stadium just like sucked the wind out of it, you know, like
look,
it was like, come on, what? Like, and you're just starting to focus so much on these missed calls that it definitely changes what it's like to be a fan. And then Charlie did what he did and you're like, okay, here we go. Some momentum. But
Charlie was on him from the third pitch of the game. Mm-hmm. Ryu starts that game 3-0 when it should be 1-2. And I thought Charlie was going to get tossed in the first inning.
Yeah.
It's one thing to have a different strike zone and catcher framing is a real thing. And hey, if an umpire is calling a strike zone half an inch wider and it's consistent, whatever. Some of these were 3-4 inches off the plate. Like they weren't even close.
No, and the Lourdes one was aggressively embarrassing.
The Chapman one was really bad too.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like the spot of Lourdes and the at-bat he was having. And then you know what was driving me nuts too is like sometimes he called that inside strike pretty bad too. And then he would have the very next pitch where it's in the exact same spot and he's calling it a ball. I'm like, okay, man, like at least with the outside of the strike zone, he was calling it consistently bad. The inside of the zone was like he just was moving it all over the place. He was like, that's a strike. There's a ball. Who knows? Whatever. I'll just
And that's
you
why
decide.
It was so frustrating in a Ryu start where like he needs every edge right now, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You can't – he's not getting enough strikes for you to nibble him on strikes on top of that. So that's a tough one.
That game Saturday, I also didn't like that Charlie didn't pinch hit for George Springer. It drives me nuts with baseball. I know that, again, sports science or whatever says that giving the guy the day off or the rest off or whatever. But he pinch hit later. I know. It's like just put him in the spot and let him play a couple innings in the outfield.
Put him in the spot that's high leverage and then put someone else in the outfield if you really don't want him to do anything other than hit once. Two on, two out in a tie game.
Yeah, and I really thought that was as much as the umpire was bad, that swing moment where you're feeling that much momentum and all of a sudden a pitcher has to face George Springer instead of Zimmer, it's a pretty big swing spot. And yeah, I think it's like again, I baseball is a sample size sport and Zimmer made a really great catch. And I know he's a defensive guy, but yeah, I just like, I'm already decided that I never want to see this guy take any at-bats ever. It's like, he's so overmatched at the plate. Like, it's really tough to watch him try to hit.
You know when that defensive play matters more? If you have the lead because Springer pinched
it. Yeah, I know. It was just, it was really, really, really tough. Okay, but question I have for the weekend, from the Jays weekend for the two of you, because I think that it's tough to extrapolate too much from Manoah dominating the A's because that's really expected, right? And I loved watching Manoah yesterday, just the way he interacts with his teammates in the dugout and how it's just like he is he's just this like gregarious guy who we talk about like a lot, like Dan Shulman calls it the barrio in the corner where it's the fun club, and I love that. But when Manoah's in there and he's just yapping away and having fun, I just love the energy that he brings to this ball club. And then, you know, you back it up with the pitchings, with the stuff that he has. It's so fun. But him blowing away the Oakland A's, we don't need to make more of a Manoah love fest. The question I have for you today, and I'm going to make this it's now time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Are we sure that Ross Stripling replacing Hyunjin Ryu is a bad thing right now? Because Ross Stripling mowed down the Oakland Athletics, and I'm reminded that this guy continues to be a little underrated as a starter, a depth starter in Major League Baseball. It was kind of why it was a no-brainer why they opted into this contract and why any discussions about it this past offseason about, you know, how ways that the Blue Jays could move some money or free up some money would be not to bring Stripling back. And I went, no. But if you look at Ross Stripling's career as a starter, he is absolutely a good number five guy. Now, we'll see how stretched out he is and how many innings that this guy can eat, but right now, are you more confident in Ross Stripling as this team's fifth starter than Hyunjin Ryu?
Yes. He knows his role well. He can show up when needed. He knows that, and he's confident in that. He has that mental side where he's like, I'm a huge asset. I can come into this, and I can play well when I'm needed. And I feel very confident with him in there. And especially when Ryu got extra rest and they kind of like attended to his needs for his game and had another bad performance, Stripling can just come in and do what's needed of him, deliver and get out of there. And so I feel much more confident in him right now than Ryu, especially with how Ryu ended the season and has started the season. It's a little bit of a trend. So I get a little bit nervous of that. Stripling's trend is that he can come in and you can feel confident in the smaller sample sizes. So, yes, I feel more confident in Ross Stripling.
I just want to remind people that Ross Stripling has actually made an all-star team.
Yeah.
That's all.
We sleep on him a bit because we got all these big new names and it's fancy and exciting.
it's also like he's the typical guy, and we talk about this with like quarterbacks sometimes and stuff of like, oh, if you're a top 15 quarterback, that's one thing. But the number 16 quarterback, you're always looking for an upgrade on that spot. It's like your number five starter, you're always thinking about, well, what would this look like if this guy bumps to a bullpen role? Now, Stripling has historically been good, and his 2020 really betrays that he's been good otherwise. He spent 4 years on those very good Dodgers team playing exactly this role, right, as a swingman. And I have so much respect for the difficulty in playing that role from a preparation standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a, you know, humility standpoint. We had Ross Stripling on this show in the offseason, and we talked about, well, you'd added Kikuchi and you know, you're fighting with Pearson, but also you're his vet and trying to string him along. And he said, well, you know what I like more than starting? Winning. And that's obvious. So if you're looking at the numbers, though, there's reason to be confident that 2020 was an aberration for Stripling, and it was an outlier bad year. You look at his career, and yeah, his ERA is worse as a starter than it is as a reliever. That's true for almost 100% of baseball players all time.
But it's four. His starting pitching ERA is four, which is something that you would take for your fifth starter any day of the week.
Especially with an offense like this.
Yes.
And if you break that down further, his ERA as a starter the first two times through the order is only about 3.6.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a guy who maybe I'm not penciling him in for seven or eight innings, certainly, but he got up to 75 pitches in spring training. He gave you four innings the other day. No reason at all you can't trust Ross Stripling twice through the order, especially when you factor in that, hey, most days, most lineup iterations, most opposing pitchers, you're expecting some run support from this team.
All I'm going to say is that last year, Ryu's ERA was four. And so I'm not just saying it's the this year, because this year it's two starts, and they've been tough, and now he's hurt and whatever. But his ERA was four last year. And Stripling's career ERA is just very similar to what Ryu's is. Do I think Ryu is the better pitcher when he's healthy and when he's on his game? I think that's obvious. That's pretty obvious to say. Mm-hmm. Am I saying I'm giving up on Hyunjin Ryu? Absolutely not. My only point here is that the injury to Ryu as a starting pitcher feels like the least impactful right now, and the guy that they do have replacing him, I think that sometimes, because we view Ross Stripling as this swing guy, we forget sometimes that he's actually very effective in this role, and that the Jays, in terms of being insulated from that injury, should be fine right now. And the whole reason you like to have the six-man staff was to protect Ryu. So him being out of the lineup doesn't really change anything from the, oh, no, you don't really want to have this. I actually don't mind that Ryu is hurt at this point of the year. And maybe, you know, being able to take off some of those innings and figure out what exactly is going on with him now can work out. But it is really, really tough that for a guy that we believe some of this isn't between his ears, that he starts off the year this way. And I will once again reference the interview with Manoa that Hazel May did in the dugout, where Manoa was talking so confidently about Hyunjin Ryu, who he is, knowing that last year was an aberration. It's easy to put last year as an aberration behind you if you get out to a good start. You know, you get out to a good start, you throw a couple of good starts, and you feel great, and you go, ha, this is who I am, I always knew it. You have two rough ones, you hit the IL, and now when he comes off of it, he has to be thinking about the fact that he has no point of reference now for being a dominant pitcher for about, like, not a calendar year, but, you know, quite a ways now, right, since Ryu had a dominant outing. I think that's tough. And so I felt really good about having Stripling. Again, Stripling, not someone that I necessarily love as your number three starter, but if he's your number five and he can eat some innings and have an ERA around four, that's a big W for the Toronto Blue Jays. Anything else you guys want to hit on right now, or let's take a break and bring in Shai Davidi?
Yeah, nothing we can't throw Shai's way.
Correct. Shai Davidi, senior baseball writer at Sportsnet. What are we looking at timeline-wise here for Ryu? That's next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Blake and Ehlers, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy, J.D. Bunkus. Ehlers for a car. Toronto Blue Jays take two of three. They're 6-4, even though it feels like a lot hasn't gone right. The latest thing to not go right is Hyunjin Ryu hitting the IL. To help us sort through that and the fallout, Sportsnet MLB insider and columnist Shai Davidi. Shai, good morning, man.
Good morning, guys. What's going on?
Oh, not much. Just working through, you know, hey, is Ross Stripling a guy? Is he? Are we expecting 2018, 2019 Ross Stripling in the rotation? Before we get to that, though, Shai, Hyunjin Ryu hitting the IL with forearm tightness. Do we have any sense of what this timeline might look like? Or is it like, is this a case of they're going to be super cautious and kind of build him back up because he didn't have a full and proper spring training?
I mean, I don't know at this point. Yesterday, they were still reading the results of the MRI and trying to figure out what that meant. But I think either way, you're going to have to be cautious based on what you saw, right? Because, you know, this is a guy who hasn't been himself for an extended period if you go back to the last 10 starts. And, you know, this isn't, at this point, small sample size randomness. He hasn't looked right for quite a period. So, you know, how much is this tied to the forearm soreness? I mean, certainly some of the things that we've seen from him so far this season, you know, the dip in velocity, you know, his curveball was down, you know, 3.5 miles an hour. You know, that certainly suggests that he's not able to finish his pitches properly. You know, the lack of command, that's another thing that suggests to you that, you know, guys maybe, you know, trying to compensate for some velocity and not feeling right because he isn't able to finish his pitches properly. You know, those are symptoms of potentially something that's a little bit more significant. So I think the Blue Jays have to figure out that piece first, and then give him a proper buildup. You know, on top of everything, you know, he and all the other pitchers around the majors have had to have an accelerated buildup and get ready for a season in a timeline that's, you know, very abnormal. You know, maybe potentially this is just a dead arm period that sometimes happens to pitchers over the course of a regular spring training. But again, could be something more than that. I think the Blue Jays have to be very cognizant before they rush him back onto a mound.
So I hadn't heard the thing about the dip in velocity because my understanding last year, well, the reason for optimism last year when he was going through some of the struggles was like, hey, this seems to be more of a location issue more than it is a stuff dropping off issue, because if we look at his miles per hour compared to years past, they hadn't really changed. Is this something that's relatively new, or is this something that I missed going into last year, the dip on the curveball?
No, I mean, that was just really on Saturday. And okay. I mean, to that extent, it was very odd, because I think his slowest pitch was, you know, 67 or 68 miles an hour on one of those curveballs. And that's light for him. Usually it's around 71, 72. And, you know, that pitch isn't sharp for him. You know, the curveball is obviously a pitch that, you know, requires a lot of torque on your arm, and requires a lot of finish at the end. If you're not feeling right, you're not going to be able to snap it off properly. And, you know, I think that's something that I think raised some flags on Saturday. But, you know, there have been velocity fluctuations, you know, dating back towards last season. You know, sometimes it would be there, sometimes it would not. And, again, you're seeing that now in combination with all the other stuff. And, you know, as much as, you know, we'll kind of hammer on the velocity, and that's an obvious one, he's just not able to spot his pitches. And that's his bread and butter, right? When he's right, he's spotting his pitches, he's confident, he's able to go do that. I think one of the messages the Blue Jays were saying in yesterday, it's like, hey, let's make sure that if you're feeling right physically, and then we'll figure out where we go from there.
So, Shai, what is the measure of him feeling right? Because like you said, this isn't a small sample at this point. And I know we're not too far removed from him being at least mid rotation caliber starter the first half of last year. But if you're the Jays, and more specifically, if you're Ryu, how do you know you're back? Because it feels like so many things are going on at once, where there's the soreness and discomfort, there's the velocity swings, there's the location issues. Like, what does "Hey, I feel good" look like for Ryu at this stage?
Well, I mean, let's look back to last September, that start that he had against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium, and it was you know, six or seven innings of shutout ball, and you know, he was obviously feeling good that day, and that's where he can be. But there were obviously some fluctuations within that during that period. And there was more bad than good over those final 10 games of last season. But, you know, that's still in there. And how do you get him back? You know, he obviously has to deal with whatever's going on in that forearm. And then from there, you know, just give him the runway to have a proper build-up. And, you know, I think one of the keys for the Blue Jays is that they have the depth to overcome that. You know, this is where having, you know, a Ross Stripling on your pitching staff is so valuable because, you know, they don't even have to spend a lot of time building him up. And it's not someone in the minor leagues who you don't know what you're going to get from. If Ross Stripling, you know, has the type of run that he had in the middle of last season when he was a real stabilizing force for this rotation and really helped the Blue Jays through a period where, you know, things were really going sideways in the rotation. You know, he was really important through that, you know, May, June, July stretch there. You know, that's exactly what the Blue Jays need right now. And so, you know, they've got the depth to give Ryu the runway he needs. And so you can get him back and have him contribute into the season without, you know, the worries of, you know, what is it going to look like every time out?
Yeah, we just did the whole, Ross Stripling is actually pretty good at this job. Where it's good that you have Ross Stripling thing that we had to do last year in the last block. So with Ryu, one of my biggest point of curiosity with the guy, and this came up during spring, right, that it wasn't a very loud spring from a narrative standpoint with this Blue Jays team, because a lot of us were heavily focused on the rumors that were circulating who they might add, right? It was, hey, who is this team going to go get? Weirdly, Greg Bird became this massive point of discussion where I had like 35 Greg Bird conversations, which I really wasn't expecting, only for him to not even make the team. A lot of wasted breath on that. But I kept asking people, Shine, I don't think I got an opportunity to ask you, but it was sort of like, hey, what is up with Ryu? How is the spring looking? How is he feeling? Because we make assumptions about the guy, and whether it's the language barrier, whether it's that he's stoic or that he was so good in his debut with the Blue Jays, we kind of just have this assumption like, okay, he's fine, he's going to figure it out, he's going to be all right. But last year, when there were the questions about how they were going to handle him down the stretch, started asking people, like, you know, around the team or during the offseason, when we would have people like Pete Walker on or Danny Jansen on about what he is just like as a person. And people kind of kept coming back with, this dude is way more competitive than I think some people on the outside realize. Like, this guy obviously cares deeply about his craft, but that it's bothering him to a degree. And there was this interview that Hazel did with, I know this is a really long answer, so bear with me on this, that Hazel did with Alek Manoah, where he was talking about, hey, Ryu knows that last year was an aberration, it was a blip. And I do wonder kind of like if there was any chatter or what the discussion was around like his off season or the way that he was actually feeling about last year and like where he's at psychologically at this stage of his career.
You know, I'm sure there was, you know, when I was in spring training, I was locked into the whole transaction frenzy period. And I actually didn't see that much baseball when I was down there, because it was more just chasing transactions and all the other pieces that were going on. But, you know, all the things you say about Ryu are right. Like, you don't get to be who he is if he's not. And, you know, from the stuff that I heard, like, he'd had a good offseason. He'd spent some time working out with his old team in Korea. So he had maybe a bit of a jump. But there were also some interruptions, right? There was a period of time where, you know, he was traveling and there was some traveling difficulties. And so, you know, he lost a bit of time. He got to camp a couple days later than some other people. He did a lot of pitching on backfield. So to prevent him from the Yankees from getting looks at him in spring training games. So on top of it being a shortened spring and a bizarre spring, there was some unusual stuff in and around that as well that maybe contributed to this. And look, I mean, if you're mapping this out over the course of what would be a usual spring training, right? Like, this is a period where pitchers sometimes do have a dip, right? You know, you're about, you know, 4 or 5 games into it, and, you know, it starts catching up to you, the toll, and then guys bounce back. It's just, you know, we're a couple weeks into the regular season because of the lockout, and so a lot of timelines are weird. You know, I think we shouldn't discount that either, because that certainly, you know, a factor in play. And if you're going to have one spring to be wary about, you know, sample size randomness, you know, this is it. So, you know, I do think that we need to kind of make sure, like, let's find out what the MRI says before we start jumping to conclusions about what it means for this year. But again, you know, you have to kind of frame that against, you know, what we saw those last 10 starts last year too. And you know, this is maybe a bit of a trend. And then how do you deal with that, and how do you counter that?
So not knowing the full status of Ryu is obviously something that we can't predict, but does this change the timeline at all for Nate Pearson? And do you have an updated status on him? You know, are they going to try to really escalate this once he's healthy, you know, to help add to that bullpen?
Well, he's essentially at, you know, the beginning of spring training because of the mononucleosis. So he threw on Saturday, I think it was, threw his first bullpen on Saturday, I believe. So, I mean, he's, you know, probably a month away, 3 weeks away at least. And, you know, I think the Blue Jays, when they do build him up, they need to stretch him out because they'd like to give him a chance to start. And certainly that would have been an option. And he will be an option once he's ready. But, you know, this is another guy who's had a lot of physical stops and starts over the past few years. And, you know, it seems that every year he comes into spring training and he's ready to go, he's in great shape, and then he has something happen and he's sidelined and he ends up chasing a season. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays, again, they owe it to him, they owe it to themselves to let Pearson get, you know, built up properly. And, you know, that's going to take some time. And so they're going to have to be patient on that one.
Don't want to put words in your mouth, Shai, but tomorrow's the start of another stretch of 20 consecutive game days without an off day. The six-man rotation stuff is behind us now at this point, yeah?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to, unless there's a real reason or pressing reason, you know, I think the Blue Jays will just roll through. But, you know, if somebody needs an extra day or they're feeling like things are catching up with them, then, you know, they'll dip down into Buffalo or do a bullpen game or something along those lines. But, you know, this is a tough period. You know, aside from it being 20 in a row, it's also a tough period because it's 20 in a row against Boston, Houston, New York. So, you know, this is a real meat grinder stretch, not just in volume, but in quality of opponent as well. So this is a really significant early test for the Blue Jays. And an opportunity for them to either establish themselves or, you know, potentially leave themselves in a bit of catch-up mode if they don't perform especially well.
So the other side of your rotation getting juggled a little bit, and maybe it's exponential with Danny Jansen out right now, is you've got new catchers catching new guys or different guys than they maybe anticipated. This is kind of a two-armed question, but do you get a sense that the team has been happy with Alejandro Kirk's progress defensively? And is Zach Collins that bad defensively that this recent outburst in hitting is a DH consideration and not a behind-the-plate consideration?
All right, so let's start with Collins. And, you know,
my favorite
Collins,
player.
I mean, a cult hero after the weekend, for sure.
I love him.
And look, I think metrically, he rated as among the worst defensive catchers in baseball last year. But, you know, the Blue Jays have been doing some different things with him approach-wise. In terms, you know, they've changed some things with his setup from what he was doing with the White Sox. And they were actually, like, he got a lot of praise for the job that he did on Friday night. And you know, he rated positively in the metrics with his performance on Friday night. So, you know, can a little tweak get more out of him? Yes. And, you know, I think the bat is going to be a significant piece, you know, because right now, look, the Blue Jays are looking for some offense in the bottom of the lineup. He's hot. You got to ride that while you can, because even if it's, you know, even if it is an element of, you know, small sample size randomness to it, you know, just milk it while it's there, and get it while they're getting good, kind of thing. So, you know, I don't think that they're going to shy away from Collins in that way or because of that. In terms of Alejandro Kirk, you know, the Blue Jays do like what they've seen. And it's kind of interesting Because one of the things that the Blue Jays look at when they're deciding who to pair with whom is that they look at the different strengths. So, you know, one of Kirk's strengths is really on the low strike, which would make sense. His smaller guy, really low setup. But he does a great job getting pitches on the bottom of the zone. You know, Danny Jansen's strengths are really on the sides of the strike zone. And so if you've got someone who's going to be at the bottom of the zone a fair bit, you know, Alejandro Kirk makes sense for that pitcher. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays are comfortable with where he's at. You know, they're comfortable, they're getting more comfortable with where Collins is at. And Heinemann, you know, he's a good defensive catcher too. So they've got him if they need to prioritize the in a game outing.
Yeah, Shai, this will shock you, having known me for a while and being a Tate guy. But yeah, I'm already like fully invested in Zach Collins. Like I'm like a believer. I'm like, he's clutch. He has a feel for the moment. He's a big bat. He's got power. This guy's be getting like regular appearances. Who cares about the defense? I'm already off the defense thing. Like he's just my new guy. I went from in a week, how could they trade Reese McGuire to how do they get Zach Collins in the lineup every single day? So you mentioned it though before you go about like trying to find production at the bottom of the lineup, and I'd like at the beginning of the year to not, you know, like I'm not worried about Bo Bichette. Like I'm fine with Bo Bichette. I know that what he's going to do, and I'm used to these slumps. I'm also used to feeling frustrated with his approach, but whatever. I know where he's going to end up at the end of the season. I am a little bit more curious about Kevin Biggio right now, because again, man, it's 17 plate appearances right this year, but guy doesn't have a hit. He's drawn a few walks, but the issue with him in the past has been that when you throw him strikes, he's had some difficulty the last couple of years. I am kind of curious just what the read on Biggio is right now in terms of like his just overall job security throughout the season, or kind of what the pressure is on him to perform a little bit better at the plate.
Well, I think obviously you can't carry a 3-something OPS, and you know that's something that the Blue Jays are going to desperately need him to change. You know, I think there were concerns about him coming into the season. It's like, what is he? You know, is he the guy that we saw in 2020 and in 2019, or was the periods when he was able to play in 2021, is that the trend line for him? And, you know, certainly the Blue Jays could have used a better start from him. You know, the fact that Santiago Espinal is playing some strong defense at second base and has contributed a few key hits, that's going to put some pressure on playing time. But I think the Blue Jays need to give Biggio a chance to get right, because of the left-handed hitters they have. And, you know, I no disrespect to your all aboard the Collins train take, but you know, I think he's the guy who's most likely to be a consistent and productive left-handed hitter for this team. So, you know, because of that, I do think there's a bigger picture in terms of why they need to give him a chance and need to give him some run. But at a certain point, he's got to show them that, you know, he's not going to get beat by pitches, hittable pitches in the zone. Right. And that's what it's looked like so far. You know, I don't see a ton of bad BABIP luck or anything like that to this point. But again, guys have slow starts. He hasn't had consistent playing time, so you've got to be fair to him too. So I really think that's sort of where the balance is right now with Biggio. But you know, they need him. They need him to be good, and he makes a major difference for this team. If he can get himself right and resemble somewhat of the offensive player he was in 2020.
Yeah, the secret with bad BABIP luck, Shai, is you have to put the ball in play for that to matter.
yes.
Thanks so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Have a great day.
Shai Davidi, Sportsnet MLB insider and columnist. Check out all his great work at sportsnet.ca and on the Blue Jays broadcasts. They're back in action tomorrow.